There were a lot of people involved in our surge capacity training efforts, and I want to acknowledge my co-authors from CDC, Gabrielle Benenson, Jacqueline Poulter, Anthony Drew, and from the University of Michigan Center for Public Health Preparedness, Drs. Jolyn Montgomery and Matthew Bolton. So the basis for what we know about what we'll anticipate needing to do for surge capacity comes from our experience with SARS in 2003. And during the SARS experience, we had a visual inspection of nearly 3 million passengers over 11,000 flights. We handed out travel alert notices to nearly 5,000 travelers a day at our 15 ports of entry. And this, 15 land borders. This was primarily done by CDC staff who had varying levels of public health experience. We did a general call for volunteers during the SARS experience, and staff were deployed to our 8 quarantine stations, the 8 we had at the time, and 23 additional locations. They were deployed for up to a month, and they work long hours, 12-hour shifts every day of the week during the early phases. And the kind of things they did were the visual screening, handing out the T-HANs, those yellow cards that Gabby showed you earlier, as well as even data entry. So their activities ranged quite a bit. So that's really the foundation for what we anticipate we'll need to do during a public health emergency. So we took many lessons away from the SARS experience, and they're relevant to our pandemic planning. Really, the two that I wanted to highlight are the need for ongoing education and training of public health personnel. The SARS experience really highlighted that we need to be doing work ahead of time to identify our audiences and get them trained and ready to serve during an emergency, and also acknowledging that local resources are really the place to start. So let me give you a little background about what we anticipate we might be doing during a pandemic influenza. This will give you a sense of what we might be doing and the needs that come away from that. So in the early stages of a pandemic, WHO phases 1 through 4, we imagine we'll be doing basic activities like issuing travel advisories and alerts, doing passive screening much like we do now where we receive reports of illness from our partners. We may also be doing targeted screening in areas of concern for travelers coming from those regions, and we'll continue to respond to reports of illness just as we do now. But in a more advanced stage, WHO stages 5 through 6, we'll be ramping up those activities. We will be doing entry screening, looking at travelers coming into the United States and looking for signs of illness. We also may be doing exit screening as travelers leave the United States. We may be doing isolation of ill passengers to give them proper care and treatment, and quarantine their contacts to monitor their health for signs and symptoms. If we determine that the contacts are low risk, we may conditionally release them, allow them to leave with instructions to monitor their health and perhaps report to healthcare providers. We'll definitely be distributing health alert notices, and we may be requesting restriction of non-essential travel. So that just gives you a sense of the kind of activities that we're imagining in the circumstances we may need surge capacity staff. So just to give you a sense of what those numbers look like. So Gabby's already mentioned that we've got 326 ports of entry. And to give you a sense of one of our key partners, to kind of compare the numbers, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, has a presence at every one of those ports of entry. And they've got about 20,000 staff. Our quarantine station's number 20, and our staff are about 100. So it gives a sense of the vast differences and really highlights what we're going to, the kind of help that we're going to need during a public health emergency. So we anticipate that at airports, we'll need between 1,400 and 1,800 staff. At land borders, about 575 to 850 staff. Hopefully the shifts will be a little more reasonable, 3 shifts of about 8 hours in length, and deployment for up to 4 weeks. So it's clear that there's going to be a big need, and we need to start working on that now, which we have. So the sources of staff, where are they going to come from? Well, again, we're going to look to CDC for deployment. We're working, building relationships with our deployment coordinator to determine who those people will be, pre-identify those folks. We also have a relationship with the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps, and they'll be providing officers. We also are working closely with the Department of Health and Human Services, and they'll probably provide a large percent of the staff that will help us from the National Disaster Medical System, regional emergency coordinators, and regional HHS offices. And then, of course, state and local health departments. We know that during a public health emergency, those people may be tasked with other duties at their health department, but we are looking to them as local resources. And here you see two of our quarantine officers that, in an aspiring photo of, look at us coming to help. So there are several characteristics that are going to make a good surge capacity staffer, and these are kind of the key ones that we're looking for. First and foremost, someone who's going to be able to be flexible, because we don't know what the emergency might be. We're planning an all-hazards approach, and we need someone who's going to be able to really roll with the punches. The duties may change. What we're estimating may not be what's needed. We need people to be able to work with diverse populations, because the traveling public comes in all shapes and sizes, and we're going to encounter those people every day. They need to also be willing to accept the potential risk of exposure. They're going to be in close contact with potentially ill people, and although they'll have personal protective equipment, there will be that risk that they need to be able to manage. We need people who can physically able to sit and stand for long periods, and those may be long hours, and hopefully they're also able to relocate for the duration of the assignment. So again, it could be up to a month. So the kind of things they'll be doing, much like in SARS, we're going to be doing visual screening of arriving travelers and crew, and potentially people who are leaving the United States as well. Surge capacity staff might be checking temperatures. They'll definitely be distributing health alert notices. They may be handing out screening forms of questionnaires to ask people about the symptoms that they're having, maybe their travel itineraries, a brief questionnaire, and helping them to complete those. They may even implement rapid diagnostic tests of travelers and crew members if that's appropriate and available for the illness of concern. And then the last one that's probably the most important catch-all is perform other duties as assigned. I'm sure in your own job description you know what that can really mean. So for surge capacity staff, this could mean anything from triaging phone calls to data entry to helping to recruit and train more volunteers. So that's really our loophole to make sure that they can do anything we need them to do. And here you see in the photo a quarantine public health officer simulating what it would be like, because the person in the passenger, that's her right there, simulating what it would be like and what it would look like when you're standing there as a surge capacity staffer handing out a travel health alert notice and doing that visual screening, looking for signs, and then potentially asking about symptoms. So we've acknowledged that there are really two points in time in which we can be doing training with this audience. Pre-event, before the event happens, and the things we're doing includes coordinating stand-up trainings, putting together a web-based course, and also putting together an on-site station introduction. So local people who've learned, our learners, can go to the station and get a chance to be introduced, see our operation in its normal function. And then during an event, those might be people who haven't been trained or who have and need to get up to speed about what the illness is and what the situation is. And we're imagining that would, of course, happen at the airport or at the land border, and it would be a just-in-time training. So something very brief, but just getting them up to speed and ready to start working. So in terms of the stand-up trainings that we've done so far, we've had four events that took place in 2005 and 2006, three with the Miami Quarantine Station in collaboration with the Florida Department of Health, and one with the Detroit Quarantine Station and the University of Michigan Center for Public Health Preparedness. So these were multi-day trainings that took place at the airport, not necessarily at the quarantine station, but at on-site at the airport. They explored the basics of the quarantine network, as you heard earlier, some fundamentals about avian flu and infectious disease, and responding to reports of illness. We trained about 80 people, and they were mostly local health department staff. But moving on from that, we recognized, stand-up trainings aren't going to get us to the numbers that we need when we're looking at between 1,900 and 2,600 people that we might need surge capacity. So we embarked on a collaboration with the University of Michigan Center for Public Health Preparedness to create a web-based course. And it will be a free online 10-module course that is ideal because anybody can take it anywhere in the United States, wherever it's convenient for them. It puts the control back in the learner's hands, but also allows us to reach so many more people who are spread throughout the U.S. It'll definitely incorporate the elements of the stand-up training. It's built on that, and I'll talk about what the content is in a moment. What's really advantageous about the web-based course is we're going to use a learning management system. In this case, it'll be train.org. that will allow us to track learners, and that's a great advantage of the web-based system, is not only are we going to be able to see how many people are taking our course and completing it, but where they're geographically located. We'll also be capturing some of their contact information so that once we know that they've completed the training, we can not only call them for the on-site station introduction, but also in the time of an emergency, know exactly where they are and call them and see if they're available. So the content of the course really explores the essentials. It gets us to the fundamentals of quarantine, isolation, and our legal authority, gives them the basics about infectious diseases and what we're doing around surveillance, of course covers PPE and infection control, and then definitely has to tell them what they're going to be doing. One of the really cool pieces is going to be this visual screening simulation, which will allow the learner, as they're looking at the monitor, to almost see someone approach them, who is a traveler, and they are demonstrating, they have a sign of illness. And the learner will have a chance to ask them about symptoms and then decide what action they would take in that circumstance. So it gives them a chance to really practice that skill of doing the visual screening and asking questions. So even though the course isn't done yet, we're still knee-deep in development. We've already got some lessons learned that I want to share with you. And the first is that training needs can really drive policy development. And this came about, there were many pressures to develop this course very quickly, but yet the policies around a surge capacity had not yet been developed. But the urgency and momentum of a training can really help to drive that policy development, bring leadership together, and help identify the gaps and get the policy process started. So even though they had to happen simultaneously, it was a great way to get us moving on some other issues. Also of note is the learning management technology, the learning management system that we're using. Another advantage is that it can help us to control module access. And what I mean by that is there's certain material in the course that may not be appropriate or necessary for all audiences. And by using a learning management system, a technology like train.org, you're able to control which users, which learners are able to access which modules, which can not only be a time savings, but if there's sensitive information, you're able to control who sees it. Of course, it goes without saying, getting buy-in early from your stakeholders and leadership is critical to having support not only at the start of the project, but it'll carry you through all the way to implementation. And then being generous and flexible with the timeline. Being flexible is not just for our surge capacity staff, it's for us too. So we've had to learn to be very flexible as our policies continue to develop and the situation continues to develop with our border strategy. And so lots of time to get this done has been really important to not feel the pressure of our own making. So our next steps, we need to complete the development of the course, pilot it, revise it based on that pilot. Then we're going to be marketing it to our audiences. And if you're in state or local health departments, we hope that we'll be reaching you with that and you'll be interested in taking the course and being available as surge capacity staff. Our next step after that is, although it's kind of going on simultaneously, is to develop a just-in-time training that will take place at our quarantine station so that during the event component we need to be working on now, and then a facilitator guide for that on-site training so that everybody is getting consistent information across our 20 quarantine stations. So I know you're not going to ask questions now, but I just wanted you to see this cool graphic. But I hope you do have them. Just save them for me, and I'll do my best. Thanks so much.